This is Kelly Blewett. I'm joined tonight by Brian Broder, the author of three poetry collections, including the brand new Every Hour is Late from Measure Press. Brian earned his PhD in English with a focus in poetry from the University of Cincinnati before joining the faculty at Indiana University East. He teaches writing and poetry classes, supports a veterans writing group, goes fossil hunting with his five-year-old daughter, Anna, and has found the time to write this new collection, again titled Every Hour is Late. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you so much, Kelly. Great to be with you.
So why did you pick the title Every Hour is Late?
The title actually comes from an epigraph by a poet I've long admired. The epigraph comes from a poem that was written in the early 30s. Also, the manuscript plays with the idea of, lyric poetry, really, there are just a couple of perennial subjects that go back to basically as long as we have been human beings and, speaking language. And those subjects are love, death, and the changing of the seasons.
I think the thing about this collection, as you said, it's something that's been coming for a long time. It has a variety of different kinds of poems in it, and it addresses a wide range of subjects. I wondered if you wanted to kind of sketch over some of the different forms and themes that sort of emerge. As you said in an email exchange we had, the book is obsessed with politics. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about the range of topics addressed before we dive into a particular poem?
Sure. Love, death, and changing of the seasons are really the perennial subjects for poetry, and those are all certainly handled in this collection. But to be a little bit more specific, there are poems about taking a cross-continental plane ride and listening to the conversations around the speaker of the poem. And those topics range in subject from video games to Donald Trump. One of my goals for this collection was to see just how wide a variety of topics and subjects I could squeeze into one book. And I guess that's also true a little bit for the formal variety of the book. American poetry is basically as diverse as we are from coast to coast. So we have poems in this manuscript, which are free verse. Certainly, that's most of what is being published in the United States these days. But then there are also poems in meter and rhyme, which is actually the vast majority of most of the poems in this book. There are sonnets, for example. There are blank verse narratives. There are sestinas. That's basically it, though. So poems ranging from, free verse and kind of wild free verse poems to poems in meter and rhyme, I guess. And in terms of subject, there are poems about fossil hunting with my daughter, who at the time was 4. There's a poem about a recent incident, I believe it was last summer, at my workplace at Indiana University East, where we had an instance of an active aggressor on campus. So yeah, poems ranging pretty wildly across the spectrum.
So Brian, can you share a poem from the collection? I think we're going to hear Fossil Hunting, Whitewater Gorge.
Sure. So this is a poem that hopefully has kind of a fun introduction. The poem has an epigraph, which I'll begin with. The epigraph comes from Justin Welby, who was at the time Archbishop of Canterbury. The other day, I was praying over something as I was running, and I ended up saying to God, "Look, this is all very well, but isn't it about time you did something, if you're there?" Fossil hunting, Whitewater Gorge. On limestone terraces, I sift with my young daughter for Paleozoic traces. Bivalves the flood water exposed within slabs and faces, so brittle she can tear horn coral from recesses with her fingers without a tear. She finds a dime-sized shell she places in my palm, asking what kind of fossil. In a gritty, pitted plume, unfathomable still, it crumbles, too faint to claim, though I stammer, squint, and stall, what it is. So I call it a clam. What's faith but doubt affirmed as unconditional? A clench of stone, old stone formed when trilobite and snail sank in a sea now farmed for feed corn, mineral supplanting leaf and frond. What's love but a denial of geologic time? This ruckled bedrock hoard, a cache of heteronyms, their harmonies unheard. In a clumsy pantomime, I kneel to collect each shard. The flecks all look the same. The jags on my knees press hard. As I sort primordial dross, managing to restore a few fragments, she's dubious. I wish on this inland shore that we grow more serious at our play. The pursuits we share, and those we don't, both of us more avidly amateur.
Thank you. So I just love the way that the rhyme just deepens certain moments in the poem. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about the way that you crafted the poem together.
Sure, yeah. Thank you for saying that about the rhyme. The poem is written in octaves, so eight-line stanzas, and the poem is also written in meter, so the meter is trimeter, so it has three beats per line. So those octaves that I mentioned are rhymed A, B, A, B, A, B, A, B. So per stanza, there are only two rhymes, but the reprieve I do give myself in the form of this poem is that I use a lot of slant rhyme. So, for instance, just looking at the first stanza, we have terraces rhyming with traces, faces rhyming with recesses, and tear rhyming with tear as a kind of sight rhyme or slant rhyme. I guess what I was thinking, too, with the kind of slant rhymes that I'm using in the sort of transmogrification of rhyme that's happening is I wanted that to echo what has happened to the fossils themselves. And so I wanted each stanza to be a kind of strange fossil record or to embody that notion of change. And then also, of course, what else is changing in the poem is the father and daughter. The father and daughter in the poem are discovering each other as they go along. The daughter in this poem is based on my own personal experience with my own daughter, Anna. We have a couple of places, actually, in the town of Richmond, Indiana, where we go fossil hunting, as I'm sure, you know, lots of your listeners have done before.
Well, and I like how she asks you this question, and you just feel like, I'm just going to have to wing it. There's no knowing, and maybe she knows that there's knowing, and that can be a moment. You talk about the father-daughter relationship changing. There's all these little moments, I think, whenever we realize that maybe our parents don't know everything that there is to know.
Yeah, you know, when you realize your parents are actually fallible. And then, of course, the moment that comes later when you realize your parents are actually going to die. This is present in the poem of, you know, what are fossils but echoes of dead things, long, long dead. And so I think that's there, too. And the idea of time and faith and love, three really, really big abstractions, really, really big ideas that the poem is playing with.
I wondered if we could just talk about that last line about being avidly amateur. What does that mean to you?
I think I was playing with the idea that I first got from Robert Frost. Frost says something to the effect of, I want my avocation to be my vocation. And so I guess I'm sort of playing against that idea in a way. I think, what is love? Something that we're all avid amateurs at. And I think that that is one of the joys of the experiences that we have with our children and with our spouses and parents. So I think that's kind of what I was playing with there.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing a little bit about your poetry. I wish we had more time to discuss a couple of other poems, but it's clear that these are made with an eye toward the past and all that you've read and all that you're seeing around you. And it's been a real pleasure to talk. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks very much, Kelly.
I've been talking with Brian Broder about his new poetry collection, The Hour is Late, from Measure Press. More information on this title can be found on our website, wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. This is Kelly Blewett.